Welcome to this episode of the Nerd Brand Podcast. It's that time where we've been waiting for another side-by-side comparison of DC and Marvel.
Yay!
So, yeah, can't wait for their communication departments to look at my LinkedIn. That's going to be fun. That's happened.
We just wanted to give some nostalgia.
Yeah. We have a special guest today. Sir, introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hi, guys and gal. My name is Nick Taylor. I'm actually a Louisville native. I'm from here, but I live in Los Angeles. I'm a filmmaker. I produce and direct and write my own short films, but I also work on a little indie hit that you might have heard of called Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar movies. So we just, of course, finished the second one last year, and we're working on the third one currently.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank
you for having me.
Marco said you were standing in a room with Sigourney Weaver, and it was amazing.
It was. It was probably the best moment of my career. Yeah. She's awesome, though. All of them are awesome.
Yeah. So there you go. See, Nerd Brand can get, like, very interesting guests. Not that the others haven't been. We love
them. Oh, are they coming after me?
No. No. I think you came in and dropped a mic. On just there you go. Hi.
By the way.
So this is a bit of a gift y'all with some nostalgia. I'll put this in. It's not in the notes, but as anybody that's followed this podcast for the last 180, 90 plus episodes, they're like, how many times, Jason, can you complain about DC and Marvel films? Like, look, so let me just say this. First of all, sorry, adjustment there. Let me just say this. So I'm a DC fan, and it has been really hard over the last 5 years.
Hold it back, man.
I mean, I got my hopes up. I was like, Michael Keaton's back as Batman. And then it came out, and I was like, Mike, can I just watch that part over?
He was definitely the best part of that movie, The Flash.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, our creative director, he's a Batman DC guy, but his background, he's got a lot of Marvel comics. So he knows a lot of deep cuts in the Marvel comics. Yeah. And so my DC side is Batman, but mostly the Grant Morrison stuff. Because I collected the trades and everything. So I also have, like, the book, like, The Long Halloween.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And several of those others as well. The stories where, you know, Batman became, you know, like, Venom, where he became addicted. They wrote a whole story about that.
Yeah.
Which, if you've watched the film, The Batman, the green stuff he injects himself with, it pumps him up and gets him, like, really going. That's Venom. And I love how that film doesn't, like, explain that. And I'm like, thank you. I don't need a dissertation on why this is here. It's kind of like explaining, like, maybe you can see what your opinion is. Does it annoy you when films over explain something? It doesn't feel like they earned whatever's going to happen at the end.
Yeah, a little bit. It really depends on the filmmaker, I think, because some assume that their audience is smart enough to pick up some stuff. Like Christopher Nolan is really good about that, not over explaining things. But then I think a lot of studio intervention is because of that, because when the executives watch the movie, they'll say, like, I don't really get that. I think you might want to explain it a little bit better, but general audiences might have gotten it, you know?
Yeah.
So it really depends on the filmmaker and the studio making the movie, but you're absolutely right. It does happen quite a bit, but it's a little bit more rewarding to see something that isn't over-explained, and then maybe it comes to you after you've seen the movie, or when you're talking about it with friends or something like that.
Making that connection and being like, oh man, like that's cool. Like that's an interesting concept where I didn't see it. I'm a big fan of watching like CinemaSins, where the guy breaks down movies. I love that concept of it. Now I can't watch a movie like when someone's walking across the room, could never heard the conversation, but they jump into it anyways. Like they heard every word and you're like, no way they heard them. They're in the other room. Like when they're talking, it's like, all right,
Then there's the single shot stuff that got real big. I hadn't seen too much of that. I know the Birdman did that. Yeah. And Marvel started adopting that, since we're talking about Marvel and DC here. Marvel did a lot of that. There was a hallway scene when Netflix had Daredevil.
Oh, that was so good.
That was amazing.
they didn't show like every, like he went into the side rooms and they kept coming back to the hallway. You know, it was mm-hmm. so well done. And then another one that they did with the single shot was Black Panther in the casino room.
Yeah.
When they're fighting, they did such a good job because they realized, to be honest, the movie, I feel like they started the whole shaky camera was born at the Bourne Identity series.
Yeah.
And now everyone's like, yeah, that's not the best because you can't even tell what's going on. You rewatch that movie nowadays and you're like, oh man, this is like
just so much running.
Yeah, running.
So much movement.
Yeah.
It's like a Tom Cruise movie.
It was a fad. I think filmmaking comes in waves sort of mm-hmm. like that because Spielberg has always done those single long takes. And then as people that watch Spielberg come up in the industry, they're like, well, I want to kind of try to emulate that, but put my own spin on it. And so, I think you've seen a lot of, shaky cams and now the long takes, like you're saying, they're just kind of, they're fads. They come in waves and then they kind of go away for a while and then they come back. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love I like looking at cinematography. So one of the things about the Batman that I liked was the fact the lens they used to shoot it.
Oh yeah.
Is perfect. It like a lot of people think that was post, but the lens was made in a way to mm-hmm. focus on the center.
Yeah.
Of what's happening and then sort of diffuse what's around. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they use a lot of vintage lenses. And Greg Fraser, I think, was the DP on the Batman and he did a really good job. There's a lot of behind the scenes stuff if you want to look more into that or listeners want to. But yeah, on those shots of the car chase, which is my favorite part of that film with the penguin. They mounted the camera right to the car. And they use a lot of those vintage lenses to get that, like you're saying, the vignetting around the corner, the blurriness, mm-hmm. and then the center is in focus. And it gives a real strong visual characteristic to that film that you don't see a whole lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there was like, it was in the, like that was the wettest movie I've ever seen.
It was very moist. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's
raining from the beginning until the end when it's all flooding.
Yeah. somebody had to be in there and be like, reading through the thing and going like, all right, we're going to get to the car chase. This is the fun part. We're going to show the Batmobile. Everybody's going to be, wait, what? It's in the rain. Oh God.
Yeah.
This is going to be a nightmare to film and you know, tires in the road and water don't work well.
It is.
Traction.
Well, and the thing that you don't realize watching a movie is that they've done those scenes hundreds of times over and over and over again. And you only see it like 1 5-second shot in the movie, but they probably did at least 4 or 5 plus takes on that. And so mm-hmm. they're just getting drenched.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Cast and crew.
All pruny on their hands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Can we get this out of the shot?
That's why Batman wears editing. Gloves.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He's got a poncho on.
So I guess one way we could start here is we obviously know where Jason feels with this, but since we're talking Marvel and DC, we can kind of go around the table, see where everyone sits real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
would you like to start?
I will start. I am a DC. I don't mind Marvel. I like it. If anything, best thing for Marvel, I think, is Spider-Man, Wolverine. Those would be my go-to there. But DC, I can't go wrong with. Batman's my heart and soul.
Isn't that funny how Batman is just travels? It's really funny. I mean, nothing wrong with Superman or Wonder Woman. I've got the posters and the shirts and all that of them as well because we call them, you know, Trinity, for mm-hmm. those listening that don't know. And now you're sitting there going like, I didn't need to know. But yeah, Batman travels a lot. So I've already said what mine is. What's mm-hmm. yours, Michaela?
Mine, so I did have a little bit of a DC phase when I was in middle school. I loved Batman. Like that was whenever, I loved The Dark Knight that came out in like 2009. Uh-huh. The Joker actually scared the pants off of me. Jack Nicholson one originally did. I remember being a kid and was, I couldn't go to bed one night because I just had his image in my face and I could not go to sleep to save my life. And it was just the Jack Nicholson version. Yeah. So watching the Dark Knight one, I was very apprehensive and watched it and I was a champ and I loved it. And then was just counting down the days until the Dark Knight Rises came out. And that was whenever I was in middle school and was kind of like, it was all right. Like I loved Tom Hardy. That was also why. Oh, and him playing Bane, I was just thrilled.
Great job,
But with that being said, I did go through that phase, but I think I would be more so a Marvel girl myself. I grew up around it. My brother was a big Marvel fan when I was growing up. He's 7 years older than me. So what movies he watched, I pretty much was, I followed suit. I remember watching Spider-Man in theaters with him and getting like the trailer, or not the trailer, the candies that had Spider-Man branded on them.
Which Spider-Man?
It was, I think, the first one or the second one.
Toby, not Tobey Maguire. Maguire.
It was Tobey Maguire. Okay. It was Tobey Maguire. And then watching like the Fantastic Four with Chris Evans before he was before he was Captain America, and just the those kinds torch. Of movies. The Human Torch. And
yeah, that's
the Incredible
not a,
Hulk.
That's not a like, yeah, that's awesome. It's a like, gosh.
Yeah, they weren't good movies, but it was just stuff
happened.
That I grew up on.
Stuff happened.
That, yeah, they were the stepping stones that led to the Avengers.
Yeah, exactly.
What not to do.
What not to do. But despite them being bad, like that was what I grew up on. So I feel like those always hold, those tug my heartstrings, the Marvel, the older Marvel movies, as bad as they are, but he's still corny.
I don't know. I think Iron Man still holds up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't until Iron Man, that's what kind of what I hit on in here, was that those were, that was the strategic side with Marvel, is that they glimpsed into the backstories of all of those Avengers and then had that group camaraderie movie. Whereas DC, they don't really highlight the individual characters, like with the Justice League and how they cross over different characters. It just seems like they're kind of trying too hard, and it just doesn't,
it's like
it,
a mash, it seems like a mashup.
Yeah, it's like what you said, it's kind of like you're over explaining the plot line a little bit.
Yeah,
and then when you're inserting outside characters into a movie, you're like, why are they there? Yeah, does this make sense?
That was my problem with Batman versus Superman. It was just a continuous origin story for everybody, and I was just like, I don't even understand why you couldn't say versus. Why is it be, you know, I broke. That's when I broke. That's when I was like, what? Anyways, you, what's your, what's
yeah. So I like all of it, obviously, even like the third party comics and stuff. But I've always considered myself more of a Marvel fan. Yeah. I grew up, you know, reading, X-Men, and particularly Spider-Man was always my favorite, even before the movies came out. I like both. I think Marvel for me has always felt a little bit more grounded in reality, whereas DC was always a lot more fantasy, you know, if that makes sense. I mean, they're both fantastical, obviously, but
I get what you mean by that.
Even like Marvel is set in the real, in our world,
And
with real cities, and DC was always felt like some faraway place that, you know, kind of similar to our world, but not necessarily.
I don't know. I given those going to my hometown, I guess, but, I don't know how you can't think Gotham isn't Chicagoland. Well, I mean, that's it's like down. I mean, Dark Knight was actually shot there. Like, yeah, exactly. It was a perfect fit for it. I mean,
well, you got Hawkman, and he's in Chicago, like actual Chicago. I think in the comics is where.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. So yeah, it's DC was just the characters are where I've always felt they go wrong is the characters are templated, and you see that. You know, you saw it in Man of Steel. You know, what's the S stand for? Well, it stands for hope. Because Superman is about that. He's hope. Wonder Woman is truth. It's the lasso. And then Batman's justice, I think, is justice.
Yeah, it's justice, yeah.
Yeah, Green Lantern is
Will.
And yeah, so on and on you can go. And those are the basis of their characters, the brand, and everything about them. And then when you try to mess with that and make everybody mopey like Batman, you end up with what you have. You still tell a story, but it kind of gets, you know, lethargic. It lumbers along like Man of Steel did. You know, I don't know how many acts in Man of Steel there are. Usually there's three acts in a movie, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why Zack Snyder finds a fourth one every time. But he did.
He just keeps going.
Sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Yeah. So. You put on here, Michaela, think of Marvel as a web. Each movie is intricately weaved is what you put in there.
A web. I get it. I get that analogy.
Very well done. So for those that know or have ever met Michaela, Michaela is a redhead. Her name is Michaela Joan, MJ. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there you go.
And we did dress up for Halloween as Mary Jane and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Peter and I. My boyfriend's also name is Peter. Oh, wow.
Wow, you're living that life. Huh?
I am living that life.
Yeah, went all for it. Marvel, what I liked about the strategy behind Marvel, it was almost like they had to have had this meeting where Thanos actually stands for each of the Infinity Stones. And so as each film came out, you know, you had the Tesseract, you had Heart, which was the last one, which was the Soul Stone, I think. And then you had the Aether for A, which nobody could probably figure that one out because you don't think Aether starts with an A, but
yeah.
And then Necklace, Orb, and Scepter. You know, and so it spelled out Thanos. You know, people look at me today are like, really, seriously? I'm like, yeah, look, this is what it looks like to not have a life.
This is a nerding 101, yeah, right there.
Nerd 101. It's a way of life. You could dive into this stuff. And it's like when you talked about Batman and behind the scenes stuff, Mitch gave me like, it's about as big as this MacBook, 15-inch MacBook Pro for those listening. And it's a coffee table Batman, the Batman book. And it's got all that stuff in it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I go through there and the art and everything and the shots and the just, it's just, you know, it's a really nice piece. And yeah, you look at that and a lot of people always complain that, you know, well, he was kind of mopey, you know, as Bruce Wayne. And I was like, if you look at the Long Halloween, this movie starts on Halloween. So right away, bang, there it is. And that's what triggered me. I was like, oh, this is the Long Halloween. And I was like, oh, God, please don't make certain characters show up now. and they didn't. I was thankful that they didn't cram it full of stuff. That's the other thing. I think movies, they get overpacked. Like you're trying to do like four movies in one. And 3 hours later, you're like, I pissed my pants. Anyways. Now they're like so demanding about under 2 hours. Like it's kind of strange. The Marvels just came out and it's less than 2 hours.
It's the shortest Marvel movie to date. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. It could have been a streaming show. And probably
that's what I was thinking of too. And every time I saw it advertised originally, it wasn't until I think this past month that I thought it was like either a short film or it was a series.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they used to do those. Do you remember those short films? What were they called?
The Marvel one-shots?
Yes.
They did short films with each. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those.
Yeah. I remember the Mandarin was one of the first ones, I think, wasn't it? Or was it something
else?
Yeah.
It was. I think it was. It might have been on the Iron Man 3 DVD or maybe one of the films immediately released after that. But yeah, I think the one that you're talking about was a Mandarin in prison.
Uh-huh.
And it was called All Hail the King, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that. Yeah. Because it's all about more on that. Mm-hmm. But I think the reason why they didn't go with the shows, because they kind of saturated their own market with all the different shows that they could have done.
Because Loki came out.
And then they had all that and like all these, and it's like they almost oversaturated with, oh, watch a show. Well, then now it's like becoming homework for someone to watch all these shows to make sure. And then you got to know the chronological order because they're not always in order. Mm-hmm. So then you have to figure out where it fits. And then.
But it's a way of life, as somebody said. It's sometimes not homework. You want to connect those dots.
It's not all Marvel and DC. Like you make films. So it's like, I'm a big fan of movies. I don't know how to do at all what you do, but I'm glad you do it because it keeps me entertained.
Yeah.
But I always like look at other films and I'm always looking at the pacing. I'm always looking at things that I was taught theology in film when I was in school, when I took that class. It's a strange class.
No, it sounds interesting though.
You get taught like every film has a Masonic character.
Mm-hmm.
And every film is about redemption, is what they would say.
Yep.
And so, but the teacher said one time, was like, except for Hannibal. The Masonic character was Hannibal. The FBI agent was the antagonist. And you're like, wait, what? And you just start to rethink that. And so they wanted us to write a paper. And so if that's the template, my brain immediately went like, well, I got to find something that don't follow that. That's interesting. So I went and I found this movie where they shoot guns and they curve the bullet and the bullet goes around.
Wanted.
Yeah, Wanted. Yeah. It's really dumb.
Yep.
But
we do not recommend that.
Yeah. Save yourself. Like, look, if you really like your time, there's other things to do. So just listen to this. But there was like, there are assassins and funny enough, Samuel Jackson is in it. It's not Sam Jackson. It's Morgan Freeman.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
And he's kind of running it, and there's this loom, and they go to that to figure out who's going to die or make a decision or whatever.
Binary.
Right. And I was just like, hold on a minute. This is nothing like, because, you know, Masonic, you think Judeo-Christian. Well, no, this is more Greek, Greco-Roman type, because the loom, the fates, Mm-hmm. That's what that was around.
The Loom of Fate. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I went down a rabbit hole of Herodotus in a river, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, all that kind of crap. Yeah. So, and I was like, okay, wait a minute. This has got a completely different feel. And I kind of felt like that was probably the most clever part about that film. Mm-hmm. Whoever stepped in and said, like, well, what if the bullet went around? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's where it went off the rails.
Yeah. Well, it was, I think it was based off a graphic novel. So yeah, it's a very visual medium. So yeah, that was a way to show something interesting that you hadn't really seen before, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. You think that if people go too hard on that, then it's just, that's when the movie is like, oh, this isn't going to go well. We all kind of know.
Yeah.
You're just literally sitting there like your soul is eating away. Does that ever happen? You're like, this is going to suck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it happens to everybody.
I know it happens to us. We work on stuff and we're like,
I was just going to say, like, there's something, not everything is our cup of tea, but
yeah. Well, because
you got to get it done.
When you're sitting inside something, it's hard to see it objectively. So yeah, you see the same thing over and over again. And you're like, oh, this is no good. Why mm-hmm. am I even working on this? But then you got to push it out. And, you know, when it's subjective again, after it's, it doesn't seem so bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, a good story of that would be like, well, Ryan Reynolds with, Deadpool, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, seemed like studios didn't want it, and mm-hmm. he quote unquote leaked footage,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden that was one of the biggest hits they had at Fox at the yep. time. And the marketing on this thing, to be in our world to think about, was just guerrilla marketing and brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, just yep. he talked about you know, emojis for a billboard. Billboards aren't cheap. They're not cheap. But to do that, that had to have been just like, who has that kind of money?
Yeah, really.
Well, the best thing about the Deadpool was that because it came out on Valentine's, the first one did,
mm-hmm.
and they had a poster. It was him and the actress. I can't think of her name. But it was yeah. like, couples see your Valentine movie, you know, and it was like them two like cuddled up on a beautiful park bench or something yeah, like that. And it was like just playing the whole idea. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. Don't you want to see a Ryan Reynolds movie? You know, a guy would say that too. It's called Deadpool. Yeah. Okay. My parents, they went and saw it. And my parents are very conservative family parents. And they weren't ready for that kind of movie. And I was like, they were like, yeah, we went and saw that. And we left right away. And I was like, yeah, I would have told you guys not to see that movie. That is not up your alley.
Because they did promote it to be a Valentine's yeah. Day movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I forgot all about it. I was in high school whenever that was happening.
That's yeah, funny. That's when you got to watch the in advertising, the ads and the visuals and missing, like, mm-hmm. the humor kind of steps in front of the mm-hmm. product.
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. where, like, the show Sausage Party actually had that same issue.
Yeah.
Parents thought it was yeah. a kids' movie, and a Seth yeah. Rogen movie is rare to see that one yeah. be a kids' movie.
I mean, we talked before on this show how, you know, after Batman Returns came out, it was all set to go to do the third one, and there's a documentary where Tim Burton talked about where he went to the studio to meet with him about the third movie. He stopped the pitch and he looked at him. He's like, you guys don't want to do a third one, do you? And it was just because McDonald's put a bunch of toys in Happy Meals and parents got mad because they thought, you know, well, it's Batman. I'm going to take my kid to see Batman.
Yeah.
And we all remember how the Penguin died with Danny DeVito at the end. Mm-hmm. And they freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what did that.
Well, I was talking to somebody about that yesterday, actually. Like, when I was a kid, I grew up in the 80s, and, like, they had RoboCop toys and stuff like that marketed to kids that are not at all kids' movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember talking about Batman, actually. It came out in 89. I was 4 years old when that came out. I remember going to the movie to see it because before that, you only had Adam West Batman, which was campy.
Yep.
And you didn't have the internet at the time. And my dad was like, oh, it's a Batman movie. It's based off a comic. I remember the Adam West one. Probably appropriate for kids, but it wasn't. It was dark and gritty and a reboot of everything. Mm-hmm. It was like nothing else up until that point. So it's funny that you're talking about the way that they brand themselves. And man, everything's just different now with the internet, though, because you know pretty much everything about a movie coming out or a show before it's even out. You know right. the tone, you know who's in it, you know the style of it, you know everything about it.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I hate that. I mean, I used to love trailers and watching the ads and, mm-hmm. and the campaigns and the marketing mm-hmm. for it, especially for what we do. And now I find myself avoiding it because it's going to ruin the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've one thing that I listed, or because it was more they had a bunch of Halloween movies, and it's how they made those, like the movie Halloween, the movie mm-hmm. Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. It's the movies that made us.
Yes,
on Netflix.
Netflix, yeah.
And just
one.
Like down the rabbit hole of how they marketed these films, it just seemed so easy, so yeah. much easier back mm-hmm. then. They didn't have to go through rigorous trials and like all these different streams. You just consulted with different theaters and movie buyouts and stuff like that. And I was like, that seems like Tim, because how they were describing it, these are guys that are probably in their 70s and 80s talking about these movies that were made in the 70s and 80s. And just, it was crazy. Yeah. Just, it just seemed so much easier. And yeah. I was like, oh, I want simpler times like that.
That's something on that concept is actually the movie Clue. I thought that mm-hmm. was the idea yeah. that they put behind it. Like, I didn't see it when it came out in theaters. So it was one of those things where, like, hearing about it, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, that's really cool. Because they just had a different ending mm-hmm. for wherever you were.
And what, yeah. and what made the movie so successful back then, it was word of mouth. Like, oh my gosh, that movie was there. And then they would chalk it up to the next theater that mm-hmm. in a bigger city. It's just all about.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to ask too many questions. It might get you in trouble, but I'm kind of curious of what you thought about that whole Universal Dark Universe debacle.
Well, I mean, this is a good place to say that Marvel didn't actually, you know, create that idea of a shared universe,
right.
because I think the original one was Universal with their original Dracula and Frankenstein and all that, mm-hmm. just for people who don't know. But yeah, so I know exactly what you're talking about. I think everyone was trying to capitalize on the success of what Marvel had done, obviously, with, mm-hmm. with the shared universes, and it's just not for everyone, not for every character, not for every movie. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think that they came out with, Dracula Untold, I think yeah. was the first one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then yeah, at the end of that one, he famously said, "The game is on," like indicating there was going to be a whole bigger universe. And then,
oh, yeah, because it was Nosferatu was supposed to be who like meets with him. And I remember seeing yeah. that one. And I was like, right,
I forgot
end.
About that.
And then there was also the Wolfman with
Benicio del Toro.
Del Toro, yep.
That wasn't a terrible movie.
It wasn't bad.
It wasn't great.
Yeah, it's like it was too like obvious of like.
Yeah. I think the Mummy that came out with Tom Cruise was the first one where they're like, all right, we're actually going to do this.
Yeah.
And it opened with that Dark Universe logo. And they're like, okay, well, we're branding ourselves as this now, and we're going to do this going forward. And I didn't think that was a terrible movie either, but apparently there's heavy, I don't want to say interference, but there's heavy influence by Tom Cruise and, you know, his branding people, to try to create that, franchise around him so that he would be the center of it.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the original intention. And I think that's kind of one of the reasons why it all fell apart. But yeah, they were releasing publicity stills with Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll and Johnny Depp as the Invisible Man. And I think mm-hmm. Angelina Jolie is yeah. the Bride of Frankenstein.
She was, yeah.
Oh, and they wow. weren't even yeah, in that movie. It was just casting. Like, this is a taste of things to come.
Yeah.
And yeah, it all just fell apart because nobody cared. Nobody wanted that, you know?
Yeah.
They're trying to shove it down people's throats, but they're not listening to the audience. And that movie just kind of tanked because of that. It wasn't a bad movie in and of itself. It was just like, nobody yeah. wants this, you know?
Yeah. And well, there's always this, the pendulum swings too far one way or the other. Either they ignore their audience, and it happens in marketing with businesses, you know, don't know your audience. Again, still a thing. Know your audience before you do things, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, or they serve the audience, a specific niche of an audience. Like, you know, like there's this whole, like, oh, that's been for fans.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's okay because that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Other times you're like, yeah, but you've got this whole other demographic you can't even get to because you've made it so fan-centric,
right,
you know? Mm-hmm. And that kind of, there's a trap there on that as well. Because I'm a Gen Xer, so in the late 40s, we're aging out already, which is surprising. I heard this the other day. So, Varka, you and I are going to the graves already. We're just sitting here going like, well, we just got started. but apparently that's the thing. And so what's coming up and they're not even familiar with this. So I looked up real quick, movies that were released in 1993. Believe it or not, that was the year that was a heyday.
I remember it well.
You had Rudy, The Sandlot, Dazed and Confused, Coneheads, Hocus Pocus.
I love Coneheads.
Yeah. Adam's Family Values, The Nightmare Before Christmas, you talked about. But then you had some films that I liked were it's kind of dark. Sorry, we're going there. Michael Douglas with Falling Down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great movie.
Oh God, yeah. Just watch a guy just completely just, you know, break and then yeah.
Fall down.
Yeah. It's not a fall down movie. He didn't fall down and say like help. No. But you had Schindler's List came out. You know, one that I think I'm told to watch, Menace to Society. Gilbert Grape.
Rookie of the Year.
Rookie of the Year, Mrs. Doubtfire, mm-hmm. Tombstone, which is a great film, The Firm.
Tombstone. Mm-hmm.
And Pelican Brief. I remember those, you know, those particular type of dramas that would come out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Those were really engaging.
Oh, yeah.
Y'all have any other, like, off the top of your head, and I'll tell you if they're in there.
Is it a Philadelphia?
Oh, I can't help him looking.
Yeah, you're
or is that
you're
late 80s still?
Sir.
Well, Jurassic Park should be in there, right?
I believe so, yeah.
But not 93. I thought it was 92.
Jurassic oh, was it? Park. I thought Schindler's List and Jurassic Park both came out in 93.
Let me see.
I could be wrong, but I could have sworn it was 92, but I could be wrong. Because the book came out in 90.
It is Jurassic Park, yes, 1993.
Oh, it is 93. All right, so then, yeah, the mm-hmm. book came out like a few years before it. Spielberg mm-hmm. loved it, shot it, and then was like, he told the writer, Michael Crichton, write another book so I can yeah. film another movie.
Yeah, they got the rights to the movie before the book was even released because they liked it so yeah. much.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it funny, too, because you look at because we talked about the Marvels. So anybody listening to this now, that movie's been out. I'm not going to give you any spoilers because I haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. I've just been following some of the reviewers and kind of watching clips and stuff like that right now. And CGI apparently is a problem.
Apparently.
with the quality in this film. But I keep hearing this over and over and over again. But I've also heard the circumstances and work conditions mm-hmm. that are there, and I'm kind of thinking like, yeah, connect the dots, maybe that's it, you yeah. know. You can't rush something like this. I mean, you can speak to this and share if you can. It's like the amount of work, the attention to detail mm-hmm. spent. I mean, one scene that's, let's say it's a minute and a half long, like could that take like a week or 2 weeks? Or
oh yeah, a minute and a half in filmmaking terms is a really long time. Like yeah. if you usually CGI or VFX shots are counted in seconds. They're seconds long because so much work goes into each one. So if you're talking about a minute shot, that's a really long time and can take months to complete.
For
an example, I actually watched the CinemaSins for Guardians of Galaxy 3. The mm. first opening scene is Rocket, a mm. CGI character, and it's a one shot, long shot, mm-hmm. him walking around in the base where they're at
yeah.
and just following him. And it's like, yeah, it's a CGI shot, but it's that long. You're like, yeah, man, some CGI effects artists like put in that time and effort. Yeah. They deserve the award for that shot. I'm one of those people. I love the long shot and how it like builds the world and gets you an idea of like where you're looking at.
Well, I think one thing that you'll notice, and James Gunn is a really good director because of this, is that he builds his films as he's writing them around those VFX shots. Like mm-hmm. he knew from the very beginning that that shot was going to be in the movie. So he filmed it accordingly. And then he gave the VFX artist an appropriate amount of time to work on that because he knew it was going to be an important shot.
Mm-hmm.
And the directors and filmmakers, producers that, do not allow the VFX artists to appropriate time to work on those shots, that's when they come out looking bad, like in
Green Lantern.
Well, I was going to use The Flash because that had atrocious CGI work, and it yeah. is not the fault of anybody working on that film. It's probably most likely the higher ups, the executives that are like, that shot doesn't work, you got to change it. And I mean, this has been planned since the very beginning, you know, mm-hmm. since the script was written, that shot was probably in the movie, but then it had to change and they gave the VFX artist X amount of time, let's say a month before release to retool the whole thing. And then they have to change it. And yeah. I would put money on the fact that it happened with the Marvels as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, clearly something was changed because I see missed opportunity with the whole where they're exchanging powers when one uses it, the other one happens. Mm-hmm. And then not really with the going between like the, you know, you see in the trailer where she's in space and there's this disruption, which looks a lot like the same disruption that Mr. Fantastic uses with a remote to come in and appear in Doctor Strange. Mm. You know, he drops in through that, and it's like, ah, it's so and so. Yeah, like we all knew who it was. I'm not saying because I'm not saying spoilers and whatever. It's a thing. So
it's a pretty old movie at this point.
Yeah. Years old. But the thing is, it's like I think it goes the other way where the tie-in, where it's not like, is that the same thing? Is that because the effects are looking the same? It's always blue. It's always purple. Sure. And then you got in the Marvels, there's the same hammer as Ronan. Like, did she find Ronan's hammer? And sure. Is that going on now? Like, well, what the heck?
It's possible that they have a certain amount of presets, for lack of a better word, that they use over and over again. I think it just boils down to there's only a finite amount of different effects that you can use for that sort of effect. Yeah. And if you want like a portal or an explosion, or there's only like probably half a dozen that you can do that look different enough, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think again, it boils down to that filmmaker or somebody on that production crew not making great decisions about the VFX shots in that particular movie or that particular production studio, Marvel being this one. But you know, Marvel's like, we've used this shot on this movie and it looks pretty similar to what you're describing, so just use that one again.
Yeah. What do you think about James Gunn now helming DC?
I think he's a good filmmaker. I like some of his early stuff as well. And what he's done for DC, I mean, it speaks for itself. What he's done for Marvel, it speaks for itself. I think that having one person in charge of anything is not a great idea, because I'm a very collaborative filmmaker. I like to get different inputs. I don't have every good idea that has ever existed, you know? And I realize that. And I think that the more that you recognize that and the more you trust yourself to being vulnerable with a collaborative group of people is better for the whole project, you know? Mm-hmm. But having said that, I mean, if they think that James Gunn is the guy to bring him out of a funk, then, you know, power to him.
I mean, it could be.
Only time was going to tell, you know?
I think I saw, I don't know his name, but I saw the casting. I think I saw the casting for who's going to be Superman. Mm-hmm. He's a young actor.
Yeah.
And new.
He looks a lot like Henry Cavill, though. Like a younger, slimmer Henry Cavill.
I mean, see that.
Henry Cavill, in my mind, is always going to be Superman. I know Christopher Reeves was good, but Henry Cavill, he, as someone who's a big nerd, I think he's the epitome of the perfect nerd, and DC missed their opportunity to really rake that in.
They did. There was some great stories. It was supposed to be Man of Steel, Man of Tomorrow, Last Son of Krypton, I think. And there was in the Flash film when they went between universes. There was Nicolas Cage, who's come out with some very strong opinions about being used without permission, apparently.
Oh man!
And he's fighting a giant spider, which was a whole thing that Kevin Smith, by the way, talked about, because he was involved in all that.
Yep.
It's called a Thievening with Kevin Smith. You look that up, and I saw that, and I was like, no, they didn't. Yeah. But they did.
Yeah, I knew that story going into that film, too. And so I saw it, and I was like, oh, they did it. They finally did it. I thought it was a very strange move on their part to use other versions of characters that they didn't deem were good enough to make in the past, in that film.
It's like, hey, remember when we didn't do this? Yeah. Usually it's like, hey, remember that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Remember what we could have done?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, hey, what if we used a movie and do all the things that we didn't do, and then we'll use it as test footage to see if we should now? And, you know, it's like, no, Nicolas Cage is not going to put on that outfit right now. And his, like, seriously, have you seen the latest movie where he plays Dracula?
Oh, Renfield. Oh, yeah.
Renfield. It's hilarious. So I was like, we've all moved on.
Some very odd choices.
So, but, Nick, I'll be curious to ask you, since you're a Marvel and obviously you work in the film industry, which Marvel movie is your favorite and why?
Like pre-existing Marvel movie that's been released so far?
Yeah. That's been released so far.
Wait, what do you know?
He's like, oh, shoot.
Spill the beans.
You know, I'm going to actually agree with Michaela and think that the original Spider-Man movies, like the Tobey Maguire ones, mm-hmm. those are, I mean, I cannot express my excitement when the, I mean, I remember talking to my cousin Varga about the trailer when it was first released, and he knows that that's been my favorite character forever. And it's just, I watched that trailer over and over and over again on the early days of the internet when it took me like 30 minutes to download that QuickTime
the
video.
The Danny Elfman music in the background, it hypes you up because, what was it? It was a copy of a different movie. It was 50 First Dates. I watched the hell out of that movie when I was a kid.
Oh yeah.
And it had a trailer for Seinfeld, like being on DVD box DVD sets, and it had the Spider-Man 2 trailer to it, and it had Doc Ock and just like the suspense in it.
I remember that trailer.
That's just Sam Raimi. I mean, he
this
is the guy that did Hercules with Kevin Sorbo. I think he did that one. I know he did Xena.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Because a lot of the cast members were in Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's true. Xena wasn't.
She had Lucy Lawless. She made an appearance. Bruce made he made an appearance. Like they all did. Even the guy that he was Jonah Jameson's assistant, you know, that was in there. I can't remember.
Oh, his brother. Yeah, Ted.
Yeah. Lee. Yeah. He's literally in the film and was in almost every episode of Xena Warrior Princess.
Oh yeah.
By the way, talk about a series that doesn't hold up. Oof. Yeah.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, that's okay.
I won't add it to my list.
In the era that it came out, I thought it was great, mm-hmm. you know, because it was like the closest thing we got to freaking Wonder Woman, you mm-hmm. know, in my mind. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, up until Gal Gadot played the character in a first live action movie, you had, I want to say, two solo cartoon films, maybe one.
There was wasn't there a show, Wonder Woman?
One video game. Mm-hmm. There was a show, but that was it. The show. And then a video game, one game, and you had, I think, one animation. And when you look at Batman and Superman, they've at least double digits on mm-hmm. animation films in the video games.
Mm-hmm.
I'd lost count.
The Batman video games, for the record, the Arkham games, no game's going better. It's actually one of those things I kind of want you to play that game because I think you'd geek out the whole time because how well they're done.
Yeah.
Like the newest one was Arkham Knight and it's the Long Halloween, actually. Like that's how it starts. And Scarecrow's taking over Gotham, putting this fear toxin in there. And like, oh, it's so well done. And I geek out about it and I'm actually replaying the games actually like 5 to 10 years old, and it's just like my background game right now because I just love it so
much.
It is
very good.
Yeah, not that I think that you kind of have this kind of pull.
You're going to pitch me something now?
But no, not well, yeah, but I ain't going to make no money on it. I would love to see, and it would require licensing, I think Predator's owned by Universal, isn't it?
No, it's a Fox property.
It's so a Fox
property? Disney owns it now.
Okay.
Disney owns Predator?
That's crazy. Anyway,
who would have thought?
I didn't mean to chuckle at that statement. Disney don't.
There's a Batman. There's a series of comics. They're not Elseworlds, but because I know James Gunn brought up Elseworlds. This is not an Elseworlds. This is just a story. Mm. And they did four of these trades or graphic novels. And the first one's Batman versus Predator.
Oh yeah.
If they could make that as a live action film, they got my money now.
There's a live action short film. Like an independent.
Oh, I know.
Film.
I saw that. Yeah.
It's probably 10 or 15 years old at this point.
But if you can find the trade and read it and go through it, you're like, oh my God, this would make a great Predator film with Batman. And that's the trick. Give me a Predator film with Batman. Don't give me a Batman film with Predator. You know what I mean?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of like what Winter Soldier did. It's an espionage film with, you know, Captain America and Black Widow.
Yeah. And that's why it did so well.
And that's why it did so well. That magic, it's like they grabbed it and they were like, oh, we forgot. And then the next one, it didn't happen anymore. And you're just like, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, but the other one that I had was there's another trade that's called Gothic. And Gothic's an old Batman trade. It's a story about a monk that makes the deal with the devil for 400 years of life, 400 souls.
Oh, wow.
And so it starts out in medieval times, and he saves himself and his monastery doesn't get saved. It gets sunk into a lake, but, you know, he builds a ship and somehow ends up in Gotham and then tries to recreate that monastery in Gotham to release the plague to collect the 400 souls to pay the devil so that he can continue being immortal.
Mm.
So that's the big picture of that. Yeah, he was Batman's like dean of the school that he was at.
Oh, really?
And so they went when he was a kid. I was like, oh God, another one of like these like, written down. Like how many pages have I seen Martha? You know. So, anyways, they didn't do that. It was just his dad picked him up from the school after meeting with the dean because he had a friend who had red hair, and he got in trouble, and the dean had him bend over the desk, and in the trash can was the friend's head.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of where this goes. So this guy, the villain, is Mr. Whisper, is his name. And he just goes around whistling and singing a certain song about the bells of St. Clemens or whatever. And he's going after the mob bosses because something happened years ago before Batman came along, did him wrong. They tied his ankles and threw him in the Gotham River. So he's waking up and dying over and over again for like almost 20 years or something.
Oh, man.
So he comes out pissed and he goes after them. So they call Batman, cast the sign, the bat symbol, but they invert it. It pisses him off. And he's like, what is that? Turn it off. And they're like, well, we need your help. And he's like, you made your bed, you lie in it. Well, they're like, great, we're screwed. Now what? They're all drinking and everything. And then all of a sudden, one of them is frozen and he can't move. Mr. Whisper was already there and poisoned the drinks and everything. And then Batman shows up, I guess because he was like, well, maybe I should check on him. And there's Whisper. And they get in a fight and they tumble off the balcony. Whisper hits the ground several stories down and is just looking up at Batman as he's hanging from the balcony. He goes, ow.
Yeah.
And then Batman is kind of looking at this going like, I think I know you. And then it cuts to Whisper going, I know you too. So they know who each other are.
Wow.
Oh, wow. One of the few people who actually knows Batman's
enemy. Yeah. So it's got this very rich, supernatural, paranormal type story that doesn't get paranormal weird.
It kind of gives you like a campfire ghost story.
It does.
Vibe. Like, and then they left her jacket, but there was no girl that left her jacket.
You know, the devil does show up, but in a way you don't expect.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing and how it plays out. It's well written. Because I've always had this thing about DC, and we'll wrap it up here. The third act, everything falls apart. It's like nobody knows how to end this thing. Yeah. You know, it's like ever since the 1989 Batman. Like Tim Burton struggled with ending the film, and he said that. Like, we can't figure out how to end this thing. And it's just like ever since then, it's like been a DC curse with films. The third act, you just clock it. You're just like, all right, the lights are going to go out. It's going to get really dark. I can't see what's going on. And this is going to end with a CGI battle. And you're just like, all right.
That'll do.
That'll do.
Well, I mean, filmmaking 101 is a film should end in usually a cathartic way for your main character because they're going through a journey. And at the end, they have either emerged from their journey having changed or having realized that they don't want to change. So they have to make a choice. Yeah. And I think that nowadays, movies end with like some sort of big, 9 times out of 10, a beam in the sky or some sort of action set piece or something. And they're thinking less about character development and plot development, and then more about what's going to be visually interesting.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that you get into all of these issues and all of these time crunches with the visual effects and stuff is because you're retooling the end because it doesn't work up until the last minute.
Yeah. Yeah. The only movie, the only pitch, not pitching you, but the only one that I sat one day, I was like, how come we don't do like what Christopher Nolan did with Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight, or not The Dark Knight, but Batman Begins, where it's majority Bruce. Yeah. Why don't we do that with Clark Kent, where he goes and investigates a kid that's not acting normal, and child services were called. There's been, church's been there. Why is the church there? Gets his attention. He investigates it, and the kid's possessed is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And then, Superman's other weakness is magic. Mm-hmm. So you can actually do a story for once without kryptonite, for God's sakes, please.
Yeah, right.
So next, John Constantine shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Why is he here? Because that demon's not normal. Well, you need a demon to fight a demon, so you don't want to overcrowd it. But one of the characters I always like is gone, gone, the son of man, rise the demon, Edrigan. So, I always felt like there's something there. You know, take the spotlight off Superman. Depower a bit.
Sure.
Without depowering.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can't. It's magic. That was a missed opportunity with Henry Cavill and Shazam and Black Adam.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's not a pitch. But if you ever come across anybody that's interested in that, I'll flesh that out more.
Sure. I'll send it your way.
Get a whole deck organized for your idea.
Yeah. Let me slack John that message, and then he'll just be like, what?
just get an eye roll, automatic eye roll.
Probably. I wrote, before I was even in Los Angeles, I wrote a Fantastic Four movie idea. And this was right around the time that Disney was acquiring 20th Century Fox. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I know that they're going to need something. This was actually the thing that brought me to Los Angeles because I was trying to get a job with Marvel. But I wrote a story that is a lot like what you're talking about. It was the Fantastic Four, and I wrote it with my friend Jason Teeter, who was a huge Fantastic Four fan, even more so than I am. But they weren't so much superheroes as they were like explorers and scientists, and they weren't using their powers for every little thing that came across, like in that Fantastic Four movie with Chris Evans. But it was a lot more character driven, and it was kind of a mystery. Like they discovered something, they were trying to figure out what was going on, and it led them. It was time travel, actually, that led them to the past, and then they discovered Kang the Conqueror, who is like the next big Marvel villain coming up. And it's something that we had thought a really, really long time about, and we were like, how can you break this cycle of what's going on with superhero movies and turn it into something different, something more interesting, but not be like a big VFX spectacle of them using their powers every 10 minutes or whatever.
I mean, it's story driven, character driven, like you said. I miss that.
Those are the best movies.
Why I love Winter Soldier. Like, I'll still watch it because I'm like, I'm watching a spy thriller. I mean, really, that's what it is. They go through the majority of the film trying to figure out what's going on, and that big, like, oh god, Hydra is S.H.I.E.L.D. And it's just
spoiler alert.
It's one of those things where it's like, why can't they do that again? You know, why can't they make a horror movie, but it's got superheroes in it? Why can't they make a drama or a romance, but with superheroes in it? You know, like,
well, they tried that with Love and Thunder, but
and Deadpool.
You know, Love and Thunder was like, as soon as I saw like some of the trailers,
the goats,
I was like, you know, this is not going to be good. And when Mitch came out and was like, no.
Yes, that's like, when you know. That's when you know.
Yeah, that's when you know it's bad. Because Mitch's pretty, he's not like Kevin Smith. Everything is, you know, sunshine and rainbows. But it like, you know, he's pretty like, all right, that's fine. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Jason, you touched on this earlier. Marvel kind of spent their time setting stuff up, right? And the reason that that payoff in Winter Soldier was so good is because you knew what S.H.I.E.L.D. was from previous movies. You knew what Hydra was from previous movies.
Yeah.
You knew Steve and Bucky's relationship from previous movies. And then this one introduced new characters and new themes and new ideas. And then when that switch flipped, it was like, oh, holy crap. Like, this isn't what I thought it was at all.
Right.
Like, even being invested in this for several movies, several years, like, that, this is rocking my world. And then DC tries to do that in, you know, one movie. With Batman v Superman, like, introduce all these characters, and of course it doesn't have the same emotional payoff. Of course nobody cares about it because you haven't given them the opportunity to learn and be with these characters and empathize with them and emotionalize with them. And
You know, the best scene, you may have one in there. There is some stuff in that film that I think is good. Like, there's a scene at the end where, you know, Martha. Gotta say, which Martha, you know, Martha Kent lost the farm, and all of a sudden, you know, they're back, and Bruce is there with Clark, and Clark's like, "How'd you save the farm?" I bought the bank.
That's a great line,
and he just looks at him like, "Really?" He's like, "It's just a reflex with me. I don't know." And they just keep talking, and it's just like, "That's it. That's it." Why can't I have a little bit more of that?
That's knowing your character, because that's exactly something Bruce Wayne would say.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. There was just a lot of that. There's also in the trailer where him and Gal Gadot were talking, it's, you know, their alter egos in the Batcave. And he was supposed to go out and recruit. I think he was trying to recruit Cyborg. It didn't make it into the film, but it made it into the trailers. But that's the other thing that kind of irritated me, because she was sitting there and she was asking him, like, you could tell, like, for those that don't know, they have a relationship. They actually have a relationship, and it works because she doesn't need to be saved. Like, if anybody tries to mess with Wonder Woman, God help them. Batman's just going to crack a beer and watch for giggles.
Like, whatever, I don't care.
And I've always liked that, and I thought they were going to capitalize on that when I saw that, because you're like having this back and forth, and he's like, well, you know, he said maybe, and she goes like, he said no. He goes, then he relents, and Bruce goes, Yeah, he said no. I think it was Aquaman that. Who it was. He was trying to recruit
yeah.
Aquaman.
Yeah. And that's another one. Like, they could have easily, to be honest, if they wanted to, there's a love triangle between those three that's yeah. easily there, because if you go into different universes, yeah, you have yeah. the Aquaman side.
But they introduced Aquaman's or, bride, so, you know, you got Myrna. So it's like, that's her name.
You yeah. mentioned Cyborg, too, like, or get the rest of yeah. the Teen Titan crew.
Oh, that man, was the only thing about that opportunity film.
Missed.
That mm-hmm. that film, that's the only hero in that film. I understand why the mm-hmm. mechanism was that he was in the film.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think he needed him.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Like, it just seems weird. Like, okay, he's in there. You get the Teen Titan connection, but like, why isn't the other ones in there?
You create this beacon of difference, mm-hmm. This differentiator from these others. You know, he's younger. His powers are more technical. There's a story there within this big story you're trying to tell. And you could have made really you could have made Justice League around him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And not try to everyone else. Just make it a Cyborg film, but Justice League.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I thought that would have been a better run on that.
Instead of Batman versus Superman being really a Superman too.
Well, it's a Justice League film. I jumped yeah. to a different film. No, I'm sorry.
I know, but it's the same concept. Batman versus Superman was basically Superman 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man of Steel 2.
Yeah, Man of Steel, yeah.
Yeah.
The same concept. And it was just like, guys, he messed with it. And I think part of the reason why they brought Cyborg in is because they can yada yada or MacGuffin. All right, yeah, Cyborg can figure out where everything is. Cool. We got a guy. He can
yeah, everything was like, all of a sudden stuff comes out, he plugs into it, and you're just like, I get the struggle on showing technology in film. I've seen folks like yourself discuss that, like how hard that is mm-hmm. to convey, like text messaging, mm-hmm. you know. Only a couple of films have done it really well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anyways, appreciate you being on the show. Yes. It's been a delight.
Thank you all.
You know, we've been going for about an hour here. So usually happens when we have a guest.
Mm-hmm.
These go a little bit
on topics like these.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah.
But we appreciate you being here. We appreciate our listeners. Do you want to tell anybody out there in the listening land or watching this, like, where if you want to, do you want to be followed, or is that creepy?
I mean, that's up to the listeners. I don't really care if they follow me or not. I am on Instagram and Twitter. I think my Instagram handle is at Nicholas Taylor. That's NICOLAUS. Oh, odd spelling. That's also my website. If you want to watch my short films, is NicholasTaylor.com. I'm on Twitter, I think, but I'm never on there. So,
yeah, and a lot of people are about to be on there.
Or X, I guess it's X now. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't
see,
know.
That shows you.
It's X Twitter.
X Twitter.
X Twitter.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, your revenue now is like the national lottery has more revenue than your social network.
Yep. It's pretty sad.
Yeah. Anyways, on that note, you can go to nerdbrandagency.com/podcast to listen to this episode. Or, you know, now that we have video, you can go to YouTube and just search for Nerdbrand and find it. Or we have a handle at Nerdbrand. They gave us a handle now. We're no longer XYZ745 potato banana squirrel. Yay.
So we have a, you would say we would have a handle on things.
And on that note, we thank you.
There's that dad joke.
And we're sorry for that dad joke if you're out there now with throwing up in your mouth.
Hey, but I could have swore I heard Varga laughing.
Yeah, that's how Varga sounds. Alrighty, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Did you know everything is an ad?
What do you mean?
All expressions related to a brand are an ad.
You just blew my mind.
Yeah, don't let overthought advertising strategies get you down. Just have your why and a budget and leave the rest to the nerds. To chime in on all the latest branding and advertising pointers, listen to the Nerd Brand Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more.